This is real news. Where is it? I'm Peter Laufer, co-director of the University of Oregon UNESCO Crossings Institute. So it gives me great pleasure to welcome to Real News my colleague at the University of Oregon School of Journalism and Communication, Torsten Schjellstrand. And Torsten, one of the reasons I wanted to talk to you in the context of this series where we're trying to help ourselves, each other, and whomever is listening, grapple with being news consumers and figuring out what's real news, what's misinformation, what's disinformation, what's propaganda. One of the reasons I wanted to talk to you is because you've spent so much time in your career working with Native peoples and working across cultural, ethnic, language barriers, where either intentionally or by default, miscommunication occurs. So now that we're in an era when there is intentional miscommunication, discommunication, and propaganda that's lie-fueled, what can we learn from the kind of work that you've been doing that will help us navigate the current era?
Well, I think one of the things that we don't talk about very much in this age of disinformation is who is being left out of that conversation. There seems to be a lot of yelling on a lot of controversial topics in the United States. The conversation is being held by people at the extremes, and all of us in the middle seem to be left out of it. And although there seems to be kind of a polarization of messaging and disinformation and what's true and what isn't, another thing that's happened that I think is less evident is that there's the commodification of information, which means that it only gets dealt with if it's useful to somebody. And not useful in a journalistic sense, in that does my community need to know this, but useful in, can I score a political point? Can I make a buck? Can I do? And those conversations are held increasingly by large organizations. And even though those large organizations are polarized, they are unified in that they're large. One of the things that's happening is we are losing the voices of people who are not parts of the large, powerful forces in our culture. And some of that is simply the loss of small newspapers and radio stations and such, where people serve their own local community. But it also has left out people who have traditionally been left out of almost all our, like Native Americans, rural people in general have been part of, they've always had their local newspapers. So there've been conversations in the community, but there've been a lot of disinformation for a long time from urban-based large media corporations who, you know, would come to the Midwest when I worked there. And the joke was, you know, the New York Times will come and cover us when they need a story about someone who's weird, you know, someone with the largest ball of string, or someone who is trying to set a record by eating more grasshoppers than anybody else or something, but they won't cover the real issues of water or whatever, land ownership. So the disinformation is also an uninformation. I mean, I don't
That's
know.
That's a good word. Yes, uninformation. But then there also is this environment that we're in now, where all of these people, all of us, have the opportunity to have a voice. And that is, one could argue, and I'll argue, part of the problem, because some of us end up propagating that which we hear that we may believe, and unintentionally spread this misinformation, disinformation, and propaganda that is malicious with intent. So how do we guard against getting something that looks official or is from a friend or neighbor whom we respect, and it in fact is either groundless or worse, is manipulative?
Well, what we need is a replacement for the small media outlets that we've always had. And I am not hopeful that we're going to make a big turnaround in small town newspapers and small town. I think radio stations are doing better. I think Eugene is a great example of with KLCC, who has to a large degree taken the place of the newspapers that no longer serve this community.
Our public radio station.
Yes. Yeah. And are doing kind of heroic work. They will always be less resourced than the newspapers were at their heyday. So I'm going to answer your question with another question, which is how do we bring back people who vet information, who gather and vet information with a set of rules that are not solely about making a buck? And we also shouldn't pretend that newspapers were somehow completely beautiful at this, right? I mean, we always presented in newsrooms that somehow there was a division between the newsroom and the business side. And there was, but it was never as airtight as we pretended it was. Because
no, and it wasn't always there. The right. newspaper in one of my hometowns, Sausalito, California, the Marin Scope, at the last time I looked at it, so maybe they've changed now. But if you looked in the arts and entertainment page, you could see the display ad for Joe's Restaurant, and next to it, the story about how good the hamburgers are at Joe's right. Restaurant. Right. And that was a direct quid pro quo, of course.
Absolutely. Yes. And a similar thing, I've worked at several newspapers where if there was a very large Sunday advertiser for us, you know, our investigative folks, none of us were going to go nail them unless it was just horrific. I think it's one of the reasons we were so eager to nail politicians because they didn't pay a dang thing for, you know what I mean? Like we were more, and I think this is true of newspapers in general, we were more eager to nail political folks than we were business folks.
And so in the meantime, then we leave it, I guess, to those who are listening, that the question from your point of view remains unanswered and open. The problem in part is a lack of replacement to the relatively in-depth coverage that occurred because of the health of local newspapers, and we haven't figured out yet what that replacement is going to be. And I think you and I would agree that we're in a problematic state because of that.
We are. I think there are some reasons for hope. I think High Country News is one of the places that is really struggling to find ways to cover their region, the whole West. It's not exactly local news, but their model is something between public broadcasting and a newspaper. I think ProPublica has it helps to have funding from people with just boatloads of cash, but props to them for using it in this manner. And the idea that you would then use that to do deep investigations that other people can't afford, and then partner with other outlets who have a bigger audience than you do. And I think there are models like that that could be successful in small and rural areas. The native communities have Indian Country Today, which is trying to do that. So I think there's hope here. It's not a completely pessimistic thing. There are people out there, smart people, committed people, who are working very hard at trying to find what the next model of real news is.
Absolutely. And in the meantime, Torsten Schjellstrand, thank you for joining us here on Real News. In the meantime, we do have the back fence, the barbershop and the cafe to fall back on.
That's right. That's right. We do.
You've been listening to Real News. Where is it? I'm Peter Laufer, co-director of the University of Oregon UNESCO Crossings Institute. Join us again for more on Real News.